On this weekend's program, how life insurance can help you leave a lasting legacy. Money Sense begins after this break. Welcome to our Money Sense program this weekend. I'm your host, Brent Laux, and I'm joined by Stuart Gillott today. Stuart is the insurance advisor you deal with at PWM Financial Services in Saskatoon. Always a pleasure, Stu. How are you doing today?
Well, the pleasure is all mine, Brent. I'm well. And how about yourself?
Loving this beautiful fall weather. So listen, I know you want to talk about life insurance today, but in the terms of using life insurance to help us leave a legacy, right?
That's right, Brent. We're going to run through several examples of how life insurance can be used to leave a legacy in a very efficient manner. And then we'll also talk a little bit about how it can be used to fulfill those philanthropic needs that our clients sometimes have.
Okay. Everybody likes the idea of leaving a positive legacy. Where are we going to get started here, Stuart?
Well, let's start with those that wish to leave a legacy. So when we uncover these types of situations, we need to review how the money will get to those intended recipients. So if it's going to be done through the will or be part of the estate, it may not get to the kids or grandkids or the recipient exactly how it was intended. Money may need to be used to pay for costs in the estate, and then obviously will be subject to probate fees. And then there's other things to consider, like how long that estate is going to take to settle. I remember when my wife was working on her mom's estate, it took more than a year to wind up.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. And with life insurance, the proceeds at death pass straight to those named beneficiaries and bypass the estate entirely. So let's use an example how we typically look at this. Quite often we run into clients that, you know, have earmarked money to go to their children or grandchildren. And in this example, it was a gentleman that had money in a one-year GIC. He's retired. Unfortunately, he had lost his wife a few years earlier to cancer. He was 62 years old and healthy. We were able to take $18,750 from his GIC each year for 8 years. We purchased a whole life policy with an initial death benefit of $201,000 and change. At life expectancy, that policy has the potential to have grown to over $390,000. So he had that $150,000 originally going to the children. Now he was looking at about $390,000. Hmm. And then there's another one that we often run into, and it's very prominent in the conversations we have with our clients, and that's passing the cabin on to the next generation.
And I know that's been a popular topic on Money Sense with yourself and with Kevin Hegedus over the years. So what considerations do people need to look at here when it comes to, say, the cabin?
Well, when it comes to that specific thing of the transition of the cabin, it's mostly technical focus. So on the tax planning strategies, mainly because a lot of people don't realize that they're going to be on the hook to pay a significant capital gains tax. And even fewer realize that these taxes will need to be paid regardless of whether the property is sold or simply given away or transferred to that generation. Mm-hmm. But there's another important step that needs to be taken before talking tax. And this is that family discussion about the plans for the cabin. Getting the entire family together to participate in a very frank discussion, that's crucial throughout this. And there's a lot of emotions that run through this, you know, that are attached to the cabin for the children. You know, they have a lot of memories that are associated with it. And it's sometimes that needs to be addressed. And there needs to be a lot of communication back and forth in there.
So what would be one of the more important issues then, Stuart?
Well, first of all, you know, when we get beyond that and they've decided to make that transfer of that property, you need to first consider the cost of this transaction. And we'll stick with that word as a transaction because it really what it is. If you've owned the property for several years and the value has increased, then there's going to be significant capital gains that needs to be paid. So in the near future, if this happens, the capital rate, capital gains inclusion rate right now is 50%. There is proposals out there that that's going to change and go up, make it even worse. So a major downside of capital gains tax, and in most cases, it's not deferrable. So the amount of this tax needs to be paid immediately. So a good example of what it might look like, we worked with a retired widow and she decided to give the cabin to her only son when she passes away. When she originally purchased that cabin, it was worth about $50,000. Over time, it's appreciated to $150,000. So basically what we're looking at is 50% of that $100,000 difference is the amount that's going to be you're going to have to pay capital gains tax on. So they're going to be looking at about $50,000 in capital gains tax in the year that that's transferred.
I know we often hear people talk about, well, I'm just going to sell the cabin to the kids for a dollar. And this is always a part of the discussion I know we've had over the years with cabins. So would that allow me to avoid that immediate capital gains?
Unfortunately not, Brent. Sorry, because we do have this discussion too. Yeah. It might actually be worse off. So cabins sold to family member are deemed to be sold at fair market value, regardless of what is actually paid. So in fact, selling the cabin for less than the property is really worth could actually result in double taxation.
Ouch.
So you'll pay tax based on the property's fair market value at the time it sold, but the new adjusted cost for the new owner is set artificially low because they only paid that dollar.
Right.
And this is just the way that CRA is using to discourage people from trying to get away with undervaluing the property. And so it's very key that you know the fair market value and the adjusted cost base so that that purchase price of the property plus, you know, any enhancements or things that you've done to the cabin, that will increase the adjusted cost base. As I mentioned, the most common misconception that we come is that people can pass that cabin to their kids with no tax consequences. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people think it's like a gift of cash, which doesn't trigger any tax consequences. However, it's treated as a capital property, and that's why there's capital gains, even if it's family. So this is one of the main reasons it's important to start talking early about this. Once the decision has been made and determine how to move that on, transferring sooner means triggering the capital gain sooner, obviously. But it also means that any increase in the value between now and when the parents pass away will not be taxable in their state. Hmm. So passing it through the will allows you to defer the capital gains as long as possible. And then in addition, the estate is going to then have to pay the tax before the remaining asset can be divided and distributed to the heirs. So when the cabin is passed through the will, life insurance policies often are used to either pay the tax bill or equalize the distribution of assets with the kids who are not inheriting the property.
That sounds like it would be a far more efficient way of transferring the family cabins, Stu.
It sure is, Brent. Let's take a look at a couple more examples and work through this. We worked with a middle-aged couple that bought a cabin for about $100,000 about 5 years ago. Seems like a pretty good deal if you ask me. Through the planning process, we were able to estimate that the future value of the cabin would be somewhere in the region of about $250,000. Mm-hmm. So upon transfer of the cabin to the next generation, there would be about $75,000 of capital gains tax owing. If we also wanted to provide some cash for, you know, upkeep once the kids had inherited the cabin, we could provide what's called a joint last to die policy for about $125,000. So this would look after the $75,000 and provide $50,000 that was there, for future costs. Mm-hmm. The annual cost on this policy was just over $1,900. So it was a, and we designed it to be a paid up in 20 years. So they would put in 38,000 and then it roughly, you know, age expectancy. And we typically use it at age 90. That policy would also have a death benefit of just over $210,000. So
okay,
easily cover the capital gains and provide money for there. Another example, we had a retired female client. She was 67, good health. She had the resources to pay for insurance to cover the taxes that would be owing on her passing. The other consideration that we had with this one was that her son may be able to either pay the insurance premium or at the bare minimum assist her with the cost. So in this example, was the one I was talking about earlier where she'd purchased the cabin for $50,000. It had already appreciated to $150,000. And then through that process of planning, we looked and said, you know, it's probably going to reach about $175,000 in the future. This would leave about $62,500 of capital gains owing. So in this particular situation, we looked at a solution called Level to Age 100. So it's a term insurance solution, but the costs just remain level to age 100. Her annual cost was going to be $2,860. So you can see here that we're using pennies on the yeah. on the dollar to do this, and it's going to be a very efficient way of paying those taxes in the future.
We're talking strategies to help you leave a legacy through the use of life insurance. We're back with Money Sense after this break. Money Sense this weekend, our insurance guy, Stuart Gillott, talking about using life insurance to help you leave a lasting legacy. A good conversation that we had prior to the break about some of the strategies people may want to consider when it comes time to using life insurance as a way to ease the tax impact when it comes to passing down a family cabin. Stuart, you also mentioned that life insurance can be used in a philanthropic manner. Explain to us how that works.
Certainly, Brent. The gifting of life insurance to registered charities has always been a popular method for individuals out there to fulfill those philanthropic goals. But that was a mouthful. and it's worth considering, when you're talking about that charity that's near and dear to your heart. There's basically two options when donating a life insurance policy. So you can donate a policy while one is alive or make the registered charity a beneficiary of the policy. So the option selected depends on a number of factors. If you make the charity a beneficiary of your life insurance policy, you retain control over that policy and can change the beneficiary, if circumstances change in the future. A donation receipt equal to the amount of the death benefit will be available on your passing. The other option is to transfer or start a policy while you're alive, and you basically, in this circumstance, you name the policy a charity as an owner and the recipient of the donation, and you'll receive possible donation receipt on the transfer. And then if you continue to pay premiums, you will receive a donation receipt for those premiums each year.
Okay.
So this type of charitable giving can be very powerful. We had a 70-year-old couple who had one of these charities in mind. They decided to take out a joint last-to-die insurance policy with the beneficiary being the charity, and the charity was the owner. Each year they would pay the premiums and receive a tax receipt for their donation. So this couple wanted to leave originally about $500,000 to charity. They were in good health, and we could effectively put in place a joint last-to-die policy for $14,195 per year. So each year they would receive a charitable donation slip for that amount, and they would leave $500,000 to the charity through the insurance. This was one of those whole life policies. So over a 20-year period, they had invested $283,000. And then this would enhance the gift that they had originally thought that they were going to be able to do by about $216,000.
Boy, that's impressive.
It's crazy, yeah. If you start earlier, it's even better. So we had a female client, 40-year-old, and she wanted to leave some money to charity. She decided to get a policy that would she would pay $250 a month. She was in good health, apart from the fact that she was a smoker, mm-hmm. but that just made the amount of insurance she could buy with $250 a month a little smaller than, sure. than a non-smoker. The policy we chose in this situation was one called an Estate Max with Empire Life. It's a whole life policy that has dividends that are used to buy more insurance as you pay your premiums. So the initial insurance amount was just shy of $163,000. Each year, she'd receive a donation slip from the charity for $3,000. By the time she reached 70, that death benefit had grown to over $240,000. And then when we talk about that age expectancy, the death benefit was over $400,000 that would be paid to the charity upon her passing. So another possible option here would be if you have a policy that you no longer need, rather than surrendering it, consider transferring the policy to a charity. You know, it could be a win-win for both sides. So whether you donate a policy to charity while living, or make the registered charity a beneficiary of the policy depends on basically your estate planning goals.
Some interesting strategies with Stuart Gillott. Thanks so much for your time today, Stuart. It's been a very interesting topic that I'm sure many of our listeners can relate to. And I assume this is one of the things you address when you're helping prepare financial plans for your clients at PWM.
Definitely, Brent. A detailed strategy of transferring assets to the next generation is part of those comprehensive financial plans we do here. And the main thing that we stress is planning ahead. It's key to making things work in a very tax-efficient manner.
How do people find out more if they're curious after our conversation here today?
They can give us a call at 306-975-9500. I'd be happy to answer any insurance-related questions. They can also visit us on the website at www.pwmprivatewealth.com. I'd also like to mention that PWM is going to be hosting a free Life After Harvest seminar this November featuring Tim Hammond, who is a broker and owner of Hammond Realty. And he's an independent real estate broker that specializes in agriculture real estate in Saskatchewan. Both Kevin Hegedus and Andrew Rodick from our office are going to be there as well. And they're going to cover things like farm values, trends, and risks, preparing for a sale, incorporation strategies, capital gains. We talked about that earlier. Capital gains and tax considerations, protecting your family's well-being, and how to live a wealthy, fulfilling life. Those dates and locations are Unity on November 5th, Rosetown November 6th, Melfort November 7th, and then Saskatoon November 8th. So seats are limited. We encourage that anyone interested in call our office at that number, 306-975-9500, and just say you're looking to get in on the Life After Harvest seminars.
I know these are popular seminars and they fill up quickly. So yes, we encourage people to give the office a call to book their free seat, 306-975-9500. Stuart Gillott, Insurance Advisor, PWM. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Brent.
This is Money Sense. Insurance products and services are offered through PWM Financial Services, Inc., an independent company which is not a member of the Canadian Investor Protection Fund. The products and companies discussed in this show are for informational purposes only and should not be considered an offer, recommendation, or other form of insurance planning or advice. Please talk with an insurance advisor. You've been listening to Money Sense.